call me Al, you can call me Ed, you just fucking call me, why don't you?
Hey everybody, now welcome to Live on Four Legs, the definitive live Pearl Jam podcast. And earlier this week, we kind of thought that this was going to happen, that we were going to get a brand new song because we got the tease with the pointing to the sky and everything like that for the song Running. And it just seemed like a matter of time that we were going to get a full single out of this. And we did. We happened to get it early this morning, released at midnight. And some people might have had it beforehand. It depends on where you're from. But at midnight on the East Coast in America, the song dropped. And once again, like we did with Dark Matter, we put together a team of Pearl Jam experts, as I like to call them. The people that have been listening to Pearl Jam forever, know all their songs, know what they like in the band, and we all shared what we think of the song and what it reminds us of and whether or not it's going to work in situations live. There's a lot to get into here. So what we did was we went on a Zoom and did it all. And here, I'm going to play the Zoom for you guys, hear the conversation, and hopefully you get a deeper understanding of at least what we all thought about the song. So check it out. I'll be back at the end. All right, everyone. So we just listened to the song, and obviously from the bat, it is pretty explosive, pretty fast. It comes in at 2 minutes and 19 seconds. So it's, you know, one of those songs you wouldn't expect them to write late in their career like this, but you know, it kind of brings you back to songs like, you know, if you want to equate Whipping and Comatose to this and stuff like that, then it's along that same line. And a lot of people have mentioned Lucan. I don't know, Lucan's in its own category, kind of, but yeah, it's sort of becoming one of those songs. And or I should say, it's not becoming one of those songs. It kind of has the feel of one of those songs. And I really do like it. I've listened to it a lot at this point. I really, really do like it. And I think it's just kind of quick. It's fun. It's energetic. My question overall is, where does it fit within the record? And there was something about having the song transition out of another song. Maybe it was Waiting for Stevie. I can't remember what that one was mentioned in the Stone interview, but I'm interested to see what the balance of the record is, where this fits, because it's sometimes with a quick song like that, when it's on the record, it can just be one and done. It can just be in and out and you kind of forget about it, especially if it's sandwiched between two songs that you really gravitate towards. But I think, as far as the song has gone, and maybe it was a good idea to make it a single because it really does stick out and it's pretty, as I said, explosive. And the lyrics, I kind of will go over this, but I've deciphered some of the lyrics. I don't know if any of them really make sense from a standpoint, but Tom, later, I'm going to call on you because you had a specific thing that you had mentioned in our Discord. So I'm going to call on you for that. But let's keep the floor open here. John, do you want to go? And just, I think the first thing we got to bring up here is that on the David Frick article, it said that it was going to be a Fugazi-like blitz. And from talking to you, and I got the sense too, even from just the little clip that we got on Tuesday, is that I didn't sense any Fugazi at all. It was more very straight up just hardcore kind of punk rock, instead of Fugazi kind of has a little bit more nuance in it.
Yeah, I would like a word with with whoever wrote that. But yeah, I really wish that I could come out here and say great things about this song. Like, I also listened to it a bunch today. I probably listened to it 6, 7, 8 times in a row. And I have to be honest, like, I liked it less and less the more that I listened to it. This song, you know, and I feel bad saying it because it's a first listen, and like, it's gonna translate better live, I'm sure. I hope. But this song to me just sounds like a bad, like, Hives impression, like that when kind of that garage band, like garage rock, had its resurgence in like the late 2000s. Like, like, I don't, this song, I just, it didn't hit for me. I had to stop listening to it because I didn't like it the more and more I listened to it.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's, look, I think I felt like that after Super Blood Wolf Moon, especially sure. Because I listened to that over and over and over again. My wife was getting, she was having a procedure done. So I was in the hospital waiting room and yeah. I listened to it about 25 times and said, you know, that line, I'm searching for a feel. That's exactly what I was with that song. So I get it. I still really have never gravitated towards it. So it's,
and like, I don't like the way the guitar sounds. I don't know. It doesn't sound like Pearl Jam to me. There's no space in that. I know that's like, that's a production thing. Maybe it doesn't sound like a band playing in a room. There's, I don't like the vocal melody in the chorus. It just, it feels like something that was just kind of thrown off. And I hate to come on there. Cause like, again, we'll see how it does live. We'll see where they put it, but I wish I could put it in the same category as Whipping and Comatose. This is going to be near the bottom for me, I think.
All right. Well, we do have somebody that can comment on the guitar and the sound and
maybe give us
a little bit of a more clear interpretation of that. And that would be, of course, the gear guru, the Sultan of Strat, Javier. And you have the Strat in your hand. I didn't see from before. It's the Strat.
Nice.
59-ish.
1960. May of 1960, actually.
Wow. Show off.
Actually, so and now that everybody's listening, so as I told Jason or Randy, even though that I had access to the song during the morning or during the day, I didn't want to listen to it. I just want to get that first take. Although I read that there was a lot of people very unhappy about, like, in the way that it was sounding, that it sounds loud, I think it could be a concept. What I really like about the song is that these guys are looking for new stuff, I guess, to sound a little bit more fresh. Like, I don't, it reminds me a little bit of the snippet that it was for March Madness. I heard like some similar stuff, like kind of like Pearl Jam, like mixed with Arcade Fire, kind of like you can hear a lot of like mod effects, like watery effects in the back. What I do find consistent though is the guitar sound is the same guitar sound that Dark Matter, like that overdrive, whatever they're going to be using, whatever, what pushed them to use, I can hear it. I think I need to listen it to for a couple more times, but I really like the take of, I don't know, trying to make an old formula or something that it maybe hasn't worked before for them, like Comatose. Like, so I heard that some people was comparing it with Supersonic. I don't see the comparison with that.
I do see the Supersonic comparison, definitely. It's that little that's what caught my ear.
Yeah, the.
Yes. But even so, within the song, it feels like it's a little bit more produced to kind of feel more siren-y than just playing it as a lick on a guitar.
And I was wondering, because there's something that it was going on in the back of the track, and I'm like, is that a guitar playing? Or it's like looping and recycling when whoever is playing, you know? I don't know. I dig it. I like it. I think I'm a Watt believer. I think this Watt is going to do an awesome job, and I know that some people were very concerned about that.
Yeah,
but he's a fan. You know, he's a fan. He's going to push them. Like, I got so hyped when I read Stone's interview over Spin, because he's like, "Well, yeah, we listen to a lot of the old stuff," and I'm like, "So it's kind of like, I wonder if like they had like one of those sessions where they listen to all the old records, and they're like, this is what you should use again. Maybe this is something that you shouldn't use. Maybe this is something that we could repeat or integrate, or maybe give it a little twist, you know?" Yeah, I think it's an old formula with new elements, which it makes it super interesting to me. I'm very intrigued to see how they're going to pull this off, like this live, where it's going to be placed on the set and everything. But like, I first impression, I'm happy with it. I'm super happy. I think it's something new.
I think you bring up the great point about that being live, but I think let's hold that until, we listen to the song for a second time. I want to just open the floor to anybody else that has anything to follow up on what either I or John or Javier has just said, and just see anybody else's takes and kind of, create the melting pot of things here.
Yeah.
Jason, you're
Can't
muted.
hear you.
Of course, this always happens.
Sorry, guys. Did anyone catch that opening bass line from Jeff? I mean,
Yeah.
that was, as a friend earlier today put it, it was so thick he can chew on it.
I mean the bass and the drums, they sound insane.
Yeah, I mean, like that's the driving force of this song, and it kind of goes with like what Javier was saying about, they're trying to go back to like, some of the old days, the old formula in a new modern way. I mean, Dark Matter is going to be this, I'm comparing it to kind of like a darker No Code. So, yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
The Twisted No Code.
I think I need the
That's it.
other nine songs.
Oh, for
Yeah.
sure. But like, look at the track listing. I mean,
Yeah.
Running is put down on
It's another
No
turning point.
Code.
What'd you say, Ned? I think that broke up a little bit. Anyway, keep go on, Jason.
No, I'm just saying that, Running is down on like number 8 on the track list. So I mean, it's a little bit further down on the record. And if you look back on their old records, where's like the number 8 song? Like, what kind of song are you getting at that point?
I
You
believe
know?
Red Mosquito was number 8 for No Code, if I'm not
Corduroy,
mistaken.
I think, is
Corduroy.
number
Oh,
8.
Right.
yep.
Isn't it? Rearview Mirror is an 8.
River Mirror's 8. Deep might be 8 or 9.
Porch.
Porch is
Porch is
8.
8.
Okay.
Eight.
Yeah, Deep is 10. My bad.
And one last thing to go back to Randy's point. I think it was about oh shoot, I lost it. Never mind. We'll come back to
We'll come back to that. Is there
that.
anybody here that's like full go? Like, yeah, 100%. I love
Love
this song.
it.
I
Love
think it's
this
great.
Okay.
I like it. It's fast, it's heavy, it's
Yep.
quick. There's it, I feel like it doesn't waste any time. And like,
Sure.
I usually am not the biggest fans of the, like, I'm not a huge Lucan fan. I'm not a huge Whipping fan, but this is still, I would still kind of like, this one's short and fast and kind of punky. And I think I really love the bridge in the song too, the one that they actually used in the snippet. But I think he sounds really great. Like, vocally sounds awesome. Yeah, I'm all in.
Hey Randy, here's a thought for you. You were saying that this is a song, and I agree with Mar too. You said that this is a song that it goes out from another song, right? Like it kind of like immediately transitions to
Yeah.
it.
I
This
think somebody's, I
could
think that's
be.
Ned is having a connection problem. I'm gonna have to mute Ned for a second
Yeah,
until he comes back.
this could be the response for that first track. This could be, maybe they're telling a two-part story.
It certainly could be. And look, I think it's Waiting for Stevie that's supposed to be in. And I'm gonna, okay, so Waiting for Stevie was kind of written in the Earthling sessions, and they were waiting for Stevie Wonder during that
And it was
portion.
scrapped and it was like put away.
Yeah, and actually that's where I want to bring Tom in here, because we got some of the lyrics down, and one of the most prominent lyric in this song is definitely at the tail end of the chorus, like the sewage and the plumbing, because we left the fucking water run. And Tom, you brought this up in our Discord that you thought it was something very specific to how this album came about. So share with everybody.
Right, right. If you remember, for people who tracked like the little drips and drabs of album info that was coming out, there was a flood at Andrew Watt's studio, which I think prompted the move to Rick Rubin's studio.
Yeah, so maybe, right.
Maybe that was referencing that flood. So could be something to that.
Yeah, they were running with gear to the other studio. Yeah. That's a pretty interesting point, yeah. Now that you explain it that way, I think it makes even more sense. Now that you guys were talking about that and the meaning behind it, I think it might be part of a combo that is integrated with a different song.
And he does that, right? Like, he gets inspiration for his lyrics for, like, stuff that just happens to be happening while they're writing, when they're making music. He did that with Evenflow. He did that with Sirens. You know, there's more examples.
I think Oceans is maybe a really good one too. Yeah, Oceans is a good one because he wrote Oceans when he was he went to go like feed a parking meter, and Jeff was playing that bass line, that do, and he was just writing to the melody because they couldn't hear him knocking to get back in. So he was just writing lyrics to the melody of that on the spot. That's a really good, yeah.
And it was pouring rain at the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
The hidden track on Lost Dogs, I think, was written like the night he found out about Lane, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely happened before, and it's interesting in this case, I think, even more so, because what we know from the record is they came in with nothing. They didn't come in with any demos. They didn't come in with any written material. Everything needed to be developed right on the spot. And, you know, that includes lyrics, which for Ed, we all know he's coming in with journals stacked to the ceiling on just ideas that he has. And I think that's kind of one of the things, you know, you got 11 songs on this record, and Ed's constantly looking for ideas, and it's right in front of him, and he can add these things. And we'll get into like what the total list of lyrics I have here is. I was telling Jason and Javier before, I personally think I have 65%, but I probably have more like 35 or 40. But it could just be like just adding things within other things that he's seen and other things that's been in his head, and just adding this scenario to that as well. Anybody else want to follow up with that? Did anybody absolutely, kind of like John, just did not like the song at all? It looks like John is the only one in that category.
That's fine. It's
weird for me because I
got to be honest.
It's weird for me. I think I need to hear the context of the full album to see where it fits in, and sometimes that helps me like it better, or makes me like it less sometimes. So.
Sure,
but just on face value, I like it, but you know, it could go up or down depending on, like I said, hearing it in the context of the full album.
And John, I definitely could see your point about the lack of space in the song, because and to Jason's point when he was saying he really liked the intro, I almost wish they played that style more, like again in the song, because it's kind of more naked without the guitars coming in, which would make it feel to have more space. But I could see your point to kind of crowded, yeah, almost.
And more dynamics. Like, I know, you know, a lot of people, you know, you complain about something being overproduced or production, and like that can be kind of a cop out. And a lot of people are like, I don't really know, so I'm just going to complain about that. And like, we'll see what happens when the record comes out. But what I'm talking about is like, there's everything is compressed in very tightly. There's when that bass intro, yes, I, you know, I'm all in on a bass intro. And yeah, I see in the chat, like, David's absolutely right. Too many words squeezed in. We saw that with Gigaton as well. We see that when Ed doesn't have a chance to test things out live before he writes things. and you can overdub and you can overdub and you can add, and it takes a real like eye for production to be able to give space. And like Rick Rubin as a producer is known for that. Like, go listen to Wildflowers, go listen to some of that Johnny Cash stuff that he did. Like, that stuff, you really hear the room and you hear each instrument. It sounds like a band playing in a room. And this to me very much sounds like it was put together on a computer. And like, it's a fine line. And that's why I'm like, I'm not going to come out and say that I hate it. It's not, I'm going to reserve judgment, the final judgment, until yes, until you get the context of the album. And yes, we hear it live. What are they going to play with? I'm sure it's going to sound better on a bootleg than it does here. But when I say like overproduced or production, I'm talking about like just listen to the instruments. Like go back and listen to Vitalogy. Go back and listen to Riot Act. You can hear the space in those songs, and you hear the room. It sounds like a band playing in a room. And this to me sounds very different from that. It's a very different production style than they've had before.
I have to give a nod to Ned here, because I was obviously not looking at the chat, and Ned put down all the lyrics, and I'm probably closer to the 35, but I would say I'm more like 43. There were definitely things that were impossible to tell, but I did. So that very chanty line that comes right out of the verse, that chanty line, I thought it was potato, potato, and it's dictator, love hater. And then the second part of that, I heard control it, which was pretty close, because it's Victrola controller. So that's, yeah. And then lost in the tunnel. Now the tunnel's getting fuddled like the sewage and the plumbing, because we let the fucking water running. Now, here's the thing. I think that kind of flows a little bit better than something like Never Destination, because Never Destination is the one that always feels so wordy to me, where the only line I seem to remember is, oh God, now I can't remember it. Hide again, play inside. Like, it's the, or knock me off the shelf is the one that I always remember. After every line is knock me off the shelf. And I can never remember any other lyric of that just bloated verse. I think this is a little different. I think even though it's fast, it's weirdly sing-songy in a way. It kind of, it's because it rhymes and it kind of has some repetitiveness to it. I don't think it's going to be a difficult song to like sing along with the band live. I know it sounds weird saying that, and like seeing it all, as you said, kind of condensed together. Randy, honestly, it feels easy to me.
Did you catch like the old fashioned Batman theme to the melody to that a little bit?
I can hear that. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, it's basically the bat signal is the front cover. So
yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think this song is totally intentional, like by them. I mean, don't forget, these guys love punk music, and they have forever. And they haven't, I mean, think about their catalog. Like, they don't make, I don't really think they've made a lot of songs like this at all. I think it's just a simple.
I would call this way more garage.
Than punk. It's just simple, yeah. Just sloppy, just straightforward, in your face. That's it.
Now, let me ask everybody a question here. Is anybody surprised that Pearl Jam in their 60s would write a song this fast, especially knowing that things were slowed down in the last couple years? We know of course, the slow burn intro and everything like that. And they weren't playing, like, they haven't played Blood in years. Spin a Black Circle maybe made it out once a leg, or, you know, once a whole entire year. That we weren't hearing these songs. Whipping, we weren't hearing these songs a whole lot. I was actually like, when they played Comatose in Chicago, I was flabbergasted by that, because I thought that they would never play that again, because I'd seen in the past that they stumbled on it so much, especially Ed. And, yeah. You know, the question is, it's not whether we'll be able to sing it. It is whether Ed will be able to sing it, because it could, if he stumbles on one thing, yeah, it could go haywire. Unfortunately, is anybody surprised that knowing all that, they still wrote a song like this?
No.
Well, it's only 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. No.
I don't think it has like relation to like Spin the Black Circle or Blood or Whipping, because it's got the old Eddie Screech in those songs, and this is it's fast, but it's melodic. He doesn't hit like he doesn't stretch his vocal cords like he would on Blood.
Sure.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah. So in that way, it doesn't surprise me.
That's a good take. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, like I think they found a way to, you know, make a fast tempo song, and you know, to fit within Ed's vocal abilities right now. Mm-hmm. I think the song could potentially be hard for him, especially when you listen to probably about halfway through the song into the end. There's a lot of strain going on. Yeah. And I don't know if he'll be able to, I don't know if he can do that live, you know, and that might be okay because.
So do you think it would be like first in the night before he gets winded or?
No, I think we would have to warm up a little bit. He's got to get a little scream going. And then I think, you know,
this is good if you're putting together the set list. And you're going like thinking about mid set, like a little bit after Even Flow, then maybe you want to calm things down, do like a Nothing Man or something like that. This would be good to follow that up to just re-energize the crowd. So I would say about if your main set's going to be 17 songs long, I'd say about in like 12, 13 spot.
Yeah.
I think late, that could late work really
set,
well.
I would say, yeah late in the main set.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the wordiness too. I know David brought that up in chat. Like there's so many words in this, and I can't see them playing this more than a handful of times. I think maybe they break it out early, and then I don't think this is going to be one that sticks around.
Now, on that point, the thing that I'm worried about this the most is that it does turn into Lucan in a way where at the end it's just complete nonsense gibberish. Right. Yeah. Right. And we don't necessarily want to hear that with a new song. Like, and if it starts off that way, if he does like the first couple nights and he's like, I'm too winded on this. I can't do it. Then unfortunately, when it gets to like Seattle late in May, then maybe they completely punt on it. And that's unfortunate because this one should be heard live, but they're, you know, Stone thinks seem to think that they're going to be able to play everything, but I think things could be a tough transition. And obviously we don't know much more than what we got out of these singles, but it could be tough. It could be tough to transition this, but look, not going to judge, just going to move forward on this. Now, only knowing by what we've read, do you guys think that this was a right choice to be a second single?
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
I think if we want to show what you have done from a different perspective, like Jason and I were saying before, it's an old trick, but with different colors, that I think it works well. But also, I think it was a good choice because they're showing like, okay, we still got it. We can still make this kind of song. But look, we have new tricks under the sleeve. Like now we can mix it with this, you know, because we have a guy who pushed us to write this song. I mean, I think Rick Rubin is fantastic. Will Rick Rubin push Pearl Jam to write this type of song in their 60s? Absolutely not.
No,
absolutely not.
Yeah, I think also it supports everything that they've been saying. Like, this is the heaviest record in years. And it's like, okay, so maybe they are trying to lead with like, okay, let's prove it, you know?
Yeah, I absolutely. Absolutely, well, yeah.
The clip, I saw a clip and I think it might have been of Something Special, and there was like a commercial for a basketball thing.
Yeah,
And that song seemed a lot mellower. So if that's going to be a single, then yeah, you might want to throw out another hard-hitting one like this just to, you know, and I mean, Dark Matter's hard hitting enough, but I don't know if you want to go, you know, multiple real mellow ones like that. So,
I think if they released something special as the single instead of this, that there would have been a lot of concern.
It might have been the Super Blood Wolf Moon. I fully agree with that. But one thing that I will suggest just in that short clip that you do kind of hear is that song does have space. That song is spaced out a little bit, and it's kind of bouncy and kind of takes you along. I don't know what the rest of it's going to be. That's yet to be seen.
I wonder if we will have the opportunity just to listen to a cut without that kind of like effect that it recycles on the back. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that will generate the sense of more space, because that's kind of like overlapping everything that they're playing consistently after the bass line. So I wonder if you remove that, you hear that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know what I mean? I think I will be interested in listening to that to see if it really changes that perspective, or it still gets like kind of like too muddy.
Now, Javier, you haven't actually told the story, so talk to us, because you were playing a little bit of the clip before, but before we started recording this, before you actually listened to the full song, you kind of knew it.
Yeah, so this is the first time that I heard the song live, but when I heard the clip that it was posted on social media this morning, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that was what Mike was playing in the Fender clip, because it's the same thing. So the notes are, right? In the Fender clip, he plays. Which is the same chord progression. So when I heard that, I'm like, I wonder what else did you play in that clip that we didn't see.
But as always, you're fucking spot on, man.
Thanks. But that really like triggered my attention. But like, I don't know, man. I'm intrigued how they're going to pull this out live again. I think John has like a really good point about like his own perspective, but I feel that this is the kind of song that they're going to pull, or they're going to be playing where they feel a little tighter, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be the first night song or a second night. I think it's going to be when like they're a little bit more like warmed up and they feel that they can let loose a little bit more. Because I feel that Pearl Jam has never like, I don't know, the first shows of the tour, they're never very good because those guys don't rehearse. Right. They just don't. But we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited to listen to Lida.
What I will say is this, is that it did remind me a little bit of the Earthling song, Good and Evil. And now they didn't only played that like maybe once, maybe twice on that tour. And the reason why they didn't play it was because Ed needed a very specific instrument that was used for the beginning of that. And I believe his brother owned that instrument. It was actually a fascinating story about like his brother got it from a homeless woman and something from like the early 1900s or something like that. It's a really fascinating story. But also, I think that song has the same kind of get up to it. That kind of, it's not as fast, but I think it has kind of the same energy and identity in a way. And they didn't, that was like the only song they really didn't play, obviously, outside of the Elton John song. I think every other song that had a guest on it was played, but they didn't go to that one too quickly. And I don't necessarily think it was just because they needed that instrument. I think that it did need a little bit more time.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that they don't have enough resources to put on their boards whatever they need.
Right.
But I think equipment-wise, I'm very intrigued to see what we're going to see for this tour, too. I don't know if you guys, what you think about the Spin interview, but like my ears perked, too. And Jason and I, we were talking about this when Stone says, oh, yeah, we're working a new production, too. I'm like, are we going to see screens? Are we going to see a special kind of lighting? What is new?
I think that no seats were sold to the back.
Right.
I understand. So thankfully, maybe there's no last kiss at this around the store. But I seem to think, and some of the things that we had heard from Gigaton is that I think they were going to try something new on Gigaton as well. And that obviously after 2020, I think they just decided no.
Yeah, it got scrapped.
Yeah. But I think that kind of comes with when they were doing that All in Washington video and Mike was wearing the glow in the dark stuff. I think that had something to do with that. And that's a little bit of a hunch and a little bit of what I'm gathering, but that's kind of years in the past anyway. So let's close this one on out. Does anybody have any final thoughts to this? Anything that they didn't get a chance to say?
You know, we'll... back with the production, for some reason, I keep thinking that they might turn lights down and do some sort of like light laser thing, or
it might look like your background, Jason, to be honest with you. Just saying, for those listening in,
it's... let that out of the bag, was I? No.
Jason, do you know something that we don't know?
He's only into light matter.
Yeah, the dark matter. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. As he takes a swig of his bottle.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think we're in for something big here because, I mean, this record was like exciting from the get-go, like when it first came up like a couple of years ago, you know, and if you've been following along and try to remember back about that process up till now, this is what we've been waiting for. I mean, people have been excited about this record, and now that it's here, it's something to... I think they're going to go big because I don't think they're going to... I don't think we're going to hear from them for a couple years after this.
Well, that's my opinion. I like doing podcasts and I like doing live podcasts, so I really hope that's not the case.
I mean, I hope I'm wrong too, but you know, they are 60 and they've toured the last, what, 3 years?
Last year wasn't really a tour.
They're short tours now.
I'm okay with the
short tours. And they still canceled the show on that short tour because they got sick and whatnot. But,
you know, go back to the last couple of years. I haven't done this like in a finite detail yet, but it always seems to be around the fifth show where there's something wrong with Ed. That he goes and his vocal cords, his body isn't used to what he's doing and needs to get reclimated to it. And he's usually by the fifth show, he's got a cup of tea in hand.
Yep.
I think he should go back to taking the bus. I think he always picks up stuff in the airport.
Yeah.
He's going to do the cell pollution radio broadcast thing again.
Right. Instead of flying in his carbon footprint planes and all that he stands against.
In the van.
Yeah.
I don't know, that's what happens to me. I always get colds from airports.
I don't think he's going in the airport. I think he's driving up to the tarmac and getting on a private jet.
Yeah. There's one lyric in Ned, you wrote down the lyrics in the chat, but there was one lyric, I think it got cut off, but I know that this is the right lyric. So I guess the end of this, because I can't just say the lyric. It's like, was cleared for it for liftoff, aborted my takeoff, living in the shadows, crossing my fingers, a date with the gallows. I love that line. Yeah. That's such a cool fucking line right there.
Mm-hmm. And reprieve ain't looking likely.
Yeah, is that right.
What it says? Yeah.
Very, very cool. Yep. Got me dumb.
Yeah. I'm reading the lyrics and there's several different interpretations I think that you can take from this, and you know, it'll be one of those songs.
Oh yeah. You think about it. Like, yeah, I don't want to think too deep into the lyrics outside of like what Tom was discussing before. Like, hey, is this just his basement was flooded and they got to move to Ruben's place? But yeah, as they'll tell stories, I'm sure. Like this one does sound like one where it'll stop and tell a story before. Maybe it's just to get warmed up or something like that. But yeah. I think this is one we're going to know a little bit more about as time goes on. Because
I will say, just in my opinion, this is the best song they've put out since Backspacer.
Really?
I was thinking about this earlier.
Like, retrograde.
Yeah,
I
wasn't a big fan of Gigaton.
Yeah, but quick escape and retrograde.
Quick Escape is easily my favorite song on that album, and it's kind of an outlier. But yeah.
I'm just animating in the back while the argument continues to go.
It's not arguing, it's just expressing opinions.
All right, I think we need to end on that. Thank you, guys. This was a fun time. I will stop recording now. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this. It was a great time yet again. You know, there's one thing that I have to bring up right now that was actually on my mind as I was listening to the song throughout the day, and then Ned actually brought it up like right after we stopped recording, and I was like, holy shit, of course. The chorus, or I should say, I don't know what's considered the chorus in this, but the, you know, the whole like potato part, as I mentioned before, that all feels very Bad Religion. In the sense of where Greg Graffin, who is such a strong presence in that band, of course, he doesn't really have like a singing style per se. It's very almost like a preacher. It's not necessarily like talking to, it's kind of a mix between the two. And it feels like when Ed is doing those, that line, lost in the tunnel and the tunnel's getting funneled. Like that feels kind of like No Control or something like that, like something along those lines where he takes that chorus and it's a chunk of words and he's very wordy in his lyrics as well. And also he doesn't, as we talked about in this, also he doesn't give a lot of space. He is very compact and pressed together. So that bit that lost in the tunnel and the tunnel's getting funneled like the sewage and the plumbing because we let the fucking water running, like that to me is very Greg Graffin. So I don't know if, obviously he was on a Bad Religion record, so maybe it was on his mind, but I don't know if he was thinking about that, but that, I think it's more Bad Religion than Fugazi. And then obviously after we stopped recording, everybody was like, ah, of course. But I wanted to bring that up before saying goodbye to you guys. Cause yeah, that was an important part to bring up. And what I will say now is that our next episode is actually going to be happening on Monday, but it will be a Patreon exclusive episode. It's the last episode in our late night series. That's right. We finally got there after about 2.5 years, almost 3 years. We finally finished the series, and our last episode is about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. And that's pretty lengthy episode. It's about the same amount of time as a regular episode that would drop on the main platform feed. So it's a good one. We go through all the speeches. We go through the David Letterman stuff. We go through all the performances. And really, we get to everything. And we try to really kind of make it big and kind of make it part of the moment because it was pretty special. It was pretty big. And that is going to be over on the exclusive platform over on Patreon. You can get there by signing up at patreon.com/liveonfourlegs. And I'm going to bring this up to you guys because we did mention this in the episode this week that we do have a new perk on the Giggle Leg and Horizon Leg tiers. And that is every week you will be sent a bootleg download for the next show that we will be covering. So if that interests you, patreon.com/liveonfourlegs, or go to the Patreon app and search for Live on Four Legs, or just go to liveonfourlegs.com. There's a Become a Patron button right at the top, and you can do that. All right, everyone. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next week for Memphis 1994, or we'll see you at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, or for all of you that just want Dark Matter news, we'll see you when the next single comes out. Take care. Culture was the seed of proliferation, but it's got it melted into an inharmonic hole, to an inharmonic hole. Consciousness has plagued us and we cannot shake it, though we think we're in control, though we think we're in control. Questions that besiege us in life are testament of our helplessness. There's no vestige of a beginning, no prospect of an end. When we all disintegrate, we'll all happen again, yeah.
sure I'm sound in the minds of the hordes, but they can't explain why it should slip away. Explain why it should slip away. History, if you draw the comforts of our curiosity, but here we are, rooted in the present day. Rooted in the present day. Questions at the sea, just alive.